ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Sunday. Corbin Middlemass in the house.
Wow.
Vacant MCG. I'm in for Ben Cameron for your Sunday takeaway alongside Daniel Harford, who's here as always. So it still feels like the usual dynamic, I promise. Half lovely to see you.
Corby, this is an absolute honour. I've been waiting for a long time for that other fella to get the Kyber. And finally, you've knifed him and we're here. This is great.
Taking over the whole network. Thank you. Just moving in on the Sunday night. Very happy Mother's Day to the beautiful Alice, Ben's partner. So he's off spending the day. Alice's first Mother's Day. So after the arrival of little Archie. So that's why he's not here. I hope he's had a great day off. He did cover for me on Tuesday too. So we did a little switcheroo.
Back scratching going on.
This is where I want to be.
Yes, on a Sunday night.
Nine games, nine takeaways. It's also the end of the round, so we've got the full thing to look back on. And we might start half with the game that we just witnessed. We're sitting here at the MCG on the back of the Crows' dominant second-half performance. They kicked 9-2 after the long break.
Yep.
They were down at halftime to Richmond. They ended up outscoring the Tigs by 47 after halftime to win by 37 points. What stood out?
Well, it was their effort in the third quarter. And Isaac Rankin stood out. He was the one that changed the game, as far as I'm concerned. They came out with a whole new energy. I hope they got a little bit of a cook at halftime because they looked half-baked. They were on their heels a lot in that first half. And Richmond took full advantage of that situation. So credit to the Tigers in that first half. But we knew, and I think everyone in footy knows, that Adelaide are a much better team than Richmond. And that should never have been the situation at halftime. So they were off their tucker. Pleasingly for footy, and certainly for Adelaide fans, not Richmond fans, they came back in the third term and play with much more ferocity around the contest, which they've been mauled at in the first half, and their ball use was much more aggressive as well. So that made the Tigers defend. And we've seen them not be able to do that for long periods of time in games so far this season. So that was the turnaround. Isaac Rankin was everywhere. He was defensive 50. He was middle of the ground distributing. He was getting opportunities in the forward 50. He really was the spark that got them going. And on the back of that, Jordan Dawson, who also had a massive third quarter, 10 disposals and a goal as well. It was pretty much the rest of the freeway for them. They just had cruise control on for the rest of the game on the freeway, and they got home by 37 points. But it was the third quarter. Rankin and Dawson were the two coups.
I saw your antenna go up. I think it was in the third quarter when Isaac Rankin was just stretching out the hammies. You're a little concerned in that moment.
Well, I mean, he's so important, isn't he? We saw what happened at the back end of last season when he wasn't there in the finals campaign for Adelaide, and we saw what happened in the third quarter when he set the game alight. So you start to think, if you're watching the game as a neutral, you're starting to think, well, who can change the game? Who can affect the outcomes of this? Not only this game, but the next couple of weeks for Adelaide, if they're not there? Isaac Rankin's that guy. So pleasingly, he got through the game. He came off, got some pickle juice, and got a rub from the trainers. But yep. The antenna was up because he is the key to the whole thing, as far as I'm concerned.
Big time. He just looked different, didn't he, out there tonight? Yep. Where you sort of thought, that guy doesn't look like too many of the others that are out there. And I think in the end, the ABC Footballer of the Year, you had both Dawson and Rankin in the best on as the third and three votes for Rankin, two for Miller, one for Dawson.
Correct.
But Dawson and Rankin so clearly the best two guys that are out there, talent-wise,
no doubt.
On the ground in what we saw from them. I said at full-time that it felt like the kind of game that whatever you felt leading in, you were thinking coming out. That the Crows won, we thought they were about a six-goal better team than Richmond, and it's about what we got. It feels like if you were pessimistic about them, you probably still feel that way, and if you're optimistic about them, you probably still feel that way. It felt like it didn't really change your mind, anything we saw.
No, it didn't. It didn't, and they're in that situation. We touched on that a few times in the pregame today, and talking about Adelaide full stop, and what have they got to achieve? Outside of qualifying, giving themselves another look, we don't really know who they are. On the back of a straight set exit last year after being the best home and away team, they're in football purgatory.
Yeah.
That's where they are. They're in football purgatory at the moment because we don't know if they're any better or if they're any worse until we see them in the pressure cooker of finals, if they get there. So there's all these unknowns still about the Adelaide Crows. They expected to win. They won. But did they win as well as we liked? Probably not. So what are they? They're still there. So it's a real challenge, I reckon, for Adelaide. And we spoke to Alex Neil Bullen post-game, and I asked him that question about the purgatory and whether that sentiment is actually real within the walls. And he answered it pretty well, talked about the week-to-week mentality, and the right to qualify is still something they've got to earn. So there's no you know, you just don't get back into the finals because you were really good last year. That's not the way it works. And they're fully aware of that. Matthew Nix is fully aware of that. So that's their mindset. But from a supporter perspective, from a neutral footy fan perspective, they are in purgatory. Who are they? Well, we'll find out in September if they get there.
The other Sunday game, we've got your half series in the can too, which we'll get to as we work our way through. Keziah Pickett is the talking point out of this game. Melbourne won the match by 32 points. The West Coast Eagles put a pretty face on it. They kicked 4-2 in the last quarter. It was their first fourth quarter win for the year as they outscored Melbourne there. We're now in round 9, 10 weeks into the season. Wow. But the Cozzy Pickett incident happened in the first 30 seconds as he was competing for a ball. Jake Waterman had his head over it. He clearly made contact with him on the way through. Should he be a little nervous about what Michael Christian, the MRO, has to say?
Not as far as I'm concerned. That was a very natural course of play. His arm was down to try and get the ball, knock it out of Waterman's hands at the time. There was no turn or bump or change of direction. He just wanted to get a hand on the ball to strip it. As Cozzy does, he gets his hand in a lot in those situations. If you watch Melbourne games, and I've done a lot of that this year, live here at the MCG. So I don't think there's anything to answer. I mean, because it's Cozzy Pickett and because Jake Waterman was hit high, there will be no doubt they will look at it because they look at lots of incidents through a game in review that we don't ever hear about. But so they'll have a look at it naturally. But I would be staggered if there's anything to answer for Cozzy Pickett. I think it's a football incident that went slightly awry. No one was manically hurt. And he was, in terms of, how do they phrase it? In the circumstances, wasn't unreasonable in the circumstances.
That's the line.
There you go. Yep. It wasn't unreasonable in the circumstances.
We've all heard it so many times, haven't we, across the journey. I 100% agree with you. The D's won, so good on them. They get to 6 wins on the year. They find themselves in 7th spot at the completion of round 9. We'll breeze through that game. So that's the 2 games on the Sunday for Mother's Day. Back to Saturday night. Our Sunday takeaway here is around Scott Pendlebury, who equaled Brent Harvey's games record, so he becomes the second man to 4-3-2, and he'll sit on that mark now for a week or so. Craig McRae was asked about Scott Pendlebury's plan to get to the milestone and whether it would involve the SCG on Friday night against the Swans, but Craig McRae says they are sticking to the plan.
No, Scott won't play next week. We're unashamed. Yeah, plan to play him the week after. All going to plan with his body and things. This is the plan that we stick to. High performance, but also rewarding and celebrating one of the greats of our game. We're excited for what that looks like in a couple of weeks' time. We'll sit in this now and have a shallow loss and dust us off quickly and get up to Sydney and put on a good performance for our fans because it wasn't good enough tonight. And we're excited for that, but at the appropriate time, we'll make sure we celebrate Pendles for what it is.
So making sure that they orchestrate the milestone to be here at the MCG in a home game, big deal or no big deal?
I'm a bit conflicted on this one. I think it is a relative deal. It's a deal, if that's a term. It's not even a term. But it's a deal because Collingwood...
So it's worth the discussion.
Yeah, it's worthy of discussion because Collingwood are in a situation where they need to be winning games of football. And that gentleman enhances that possibility significantly when he's out there, Scott Pendlebury. We've known that for 432 games. So that shouldn't be a surprise. And you just have to think that even though it was a 5-day break, like Hawthorn did last week when they played Hawthorn, had he played, they would have won that game of footy, in my view. And then he's got 9 days until the game on the weekend against Geelong. Now, in the end, he probably wasn't going to change that game because of the margin in the end, the way that Geelong dismantled them in the second half in particular. But part of me, listening to that grab, it was about a high performance and a celebration. Mm. I think it's more celebration than high performance, in my view. Now, they can hound me down, say, if you're not in the walls, you wouldn't know. But I think there's a fair assessment from a lot of footy fans and a lot of footy people that this is more celebration than high performance. And I don't really want to argue with that or disagree that that's probably the right thing to do because this is a momentous occasion.
Yeah,
this isn't a run-of-the-mill 300-gamer trying to get to 300, just crawl his way to 300. This is a guy who's still very, very capable of competing week in, week out, has no signs that he's letting up physically or certainly from a football perspective when he's out there. And this is momentous. This is the most significant moment in the game's history.
Yeah.
The game's record, 433. In the modern game where we were told 10 years ago that no one would get to 300 anymore because of the way of the game and reduced interchange and all that sort of stuff. We were fed a lie there. And because we're constantly being shown that they are capable, these athletes, looking after themselves the way they train and prepare these days. And this is the biggest moment we'll have. So it rightly should be celebrated. Now, I don't know what the budget is normally for a Collingwood West Coast game in terms of crowds at the MCG, probably about 35, maybe 40. they'll get 80, 85, maybe even 90.
Yeah.
Because of this moment. And not just Collingwood fans will come to that game. Mm. They'll want to see, they want to be there the day Scott Pendlebury broke the record. And that's worthy of watching. But does it come at a cost from wins and losses for Collingwood?
Mm.
Part of me says it does.
The other stuff around it, so the fact that they're talking about moving a fixture to give it clear air to make sure there's no game that competes with it in the twilight slot, the gold number that he's going to wear on his back.
Yeah.
I know that's created a lot of debate too. I hope when we get there, we can celebrate this guy, that we're not going to get so caught up in the conversation around it about, oh, it's over the top and everything else. I get the game stuff and what you're saying, because you kind of think, well, he's in their top 10 players, maybe even more than that. That they
top five at the moment.
That they clearly need him to be able to win, and yet he's not going to play off, you know, short breaks. But I hope the stuff like the gold numbers and everything else, that if he does do that, fair play to him. I don't have an issue with that whatsoever.
I think when we get there, it'll be all positive.
Awesome.
And so it should be.
Yeah.
Because it is, as I said, it's significant. It's possibly one of the most significant moment in the game.
Yeah.
So when we get there, there'll be a lot of debate up until, you know, Boomer's, when he broke the record, all the North players wore his jumper. Wore
yes.
the jumper with his number or name or whatever.
I think it had Boomer in one of the
stripes.
One of the stripes.
Yeah. So they were all in on that. So, you know, if you're looking from a team perspective,
yeah.
Boomer included the team, or the team wanted to be a part of that with Boomer, or however the discussion went. It's going to be a little bit different with Scott. But I hope when we get there, it's purely celebration, because he has been nothing short of phenomenal.
Quick takes. I know we got one major takeaway from each game, but I've got a couple of little side ones here. Tom Stewart, we had the debate on the broadcast yesterday about, you know, has there been a better mature age recruit? And the only name we could come up with in the same conversation or the same neighbourhood is Dane Zorko. And longevity,
good.
Captain of the club, hard times, you know, wins multiple best and fairest, a couple of premierships and everything else. But I think the reason why I've got Tom Stewart so high in this conversation is I feel like we undervalue all Australian jumpers. Like, if you're a defender, and as he's been as an interceptor defender that's helped
yep.
change the game and revolutionise that position in the sport and everything else, I think five times he's been voted in the premier team, like the best 22 guys that we can assemble in the game. Feels like sometimes we gloss over that. We say, oh, he's five-time All-Australian. We think, hang on, five times he's been in the premier team in the league. I don't know. I just think it's a remarkable career for a guy who was running around for South Barwon or whatever. And
yeah, yeah.
Turns out he hadn't played a game until he was 24.
Well, I think your point before was really relevant. Like, he's changed the game. The way yeah. that role is now played is across the league is because of a guy like him who came in and started to become this absolute threat, this weapon in the back half of the ground that would repel and create and sit off and help and just be this really strong ally for all his teammates out there all over the ground. And now it's become par for the course. You've got to have a Tom Stewart role in your team if you want to be successful. He's been a phenomenal player. Like that whole, you know, South Barwon connection, all of a sudden you're in the AFL and you're dominating, you get five All-Australians.
Amazing.
Let alone the premiership and whatever else he's done through his time. He's been a remarkable player and just ever reliable and consistent. Like, you just trust Tom Stewart with your life, I reckon. Just a rock-solid citizen. That's the way he plays. And he's been at the top of the game for however, well, 10 years.
Grime Myers is a fascinating conversation. So played VFL yesterday with a partially torn ACL.
Yeah.
And the coach says he'll play next week.
Well, I've had mates that have had torn ACLs, didn't get them repaired, and continued playing footy. They had a couple of weeks off and they continued playing footy. And there's never been an issue. They've never ruptured, fully ruptured. They've never had any problems. But I've had other guys in similar positions, mates that have had that sort of strain, grade 2-3 sort of strain, slight tears, not get it fixed, and then it goes 3 months later. So I've seen both sides of it, but it's not uncommon necessarily for that to happen.
I get the big guys that, you know, move in straight lines and everything else. If ever there's someone that relies on, you know, change of direction, he's the guy. And did you see the Darcy Moore concussion?
I did.
What do you think about the technique that was on display there from both guys?
It was incredibly poor.
Yeah.
Incredibly poor. And it's an unintended consequences of the whole head of sacrosanct
100%.
Adjudication that we've been going on for however long that's been around. Players are putting themselves in really vulnerable positions because they know they'll get a free kick. It's not about being protected. They won't get protected because they're still going to get hit and possibly have concussions as a result. So they're not getting protected. People talk about, oh, they'll be protected by the umpires. No, they'll get a free kick. But they're not getting protected. They still get the hit. And they do it because they do get the free kick. And it drives me bananas. I've been on about this for 10 years. And it drives me really bananas because someone's going to get really hurt for the way they attack a footy. And the way that the game's played these days in the last 5 years or so, there's so much congestion and so much power and speed around the ball. And it's only a couple of steps you need to really do some damage. You don't need a big line-up 40-metre sprint to hit someone and do damage anymore. Mm. It's a couple of steps in the wrong angle, in the wrong position, attacking the footy, and you're going to get seriously hurt, let alone the concussion threat and what that's doing to the game as a broader conversation. I think the players need to take charge of this. This is because it's coaching at all levels, but the players have to take charge of this and say, well, this, we're not going to put ourselves in those situations. We need to be better at this. In my view, I've said this many, many years, if you lead with your head, I would give away a free kick for that. That's your prior opportunity. If you do, it's like sliding the legs, hitting the legs when you slide. You can't do that anymore. If you lead with your head, you can't do that anymore. Yep. So you're going to give the free kick away. I would take the incentive away and totally revamp what safe practice is when you're approaching a contested ball.
Yeah, it felt like the commentators like yourself have been saying for years, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. We saw it on the weekend that it...
So dangerous and so poor technically.
Yeah. And we're trying to reduce concussions as much as we can. And yet,
yeah, correct.
Players attack the footy like that nowadays because they feel like they know they're going to be protected. The guy on the other way is not going to approach it properly, yep. Or at least in the way that we're all taught as a way to protect yourself and your opponent and the other guy.
I'll cop it from Oisin Mullen, who's been in the game 44 minutes. Like, I'll cop that to a degree.
Yep.
Not Darcy Moore. And not anyone else who's been doing this for a long time.
Yeah. To Darwin, to the top end. So the Suns extend their winning run to 9 there against the Nassless Saints. So Nasai Wanganeen-Miller made the trip and then was a late out. So you know what he was a late out with?
He was managed.
He was managed.
Yeah, so managed, of course he was.
Another managed in the competition, but... Seems bizarre that you'd take him all the way to Darwin and then just puts the heels up, doesn't play.
Unless he had a corporate function, he was had to be out for the footy club to make some money or something. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. If he's injured and not playing because of that, although he's been managed accordingly, why would you take him unless there's a PR move or a commercial benefit for the footy club? Doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And they were found wanting a bit in the second half. And their first quarter was terrific. Set the game up with 5 goals and... You go in thinking, okay, Saints are really ready to play you tonight, and then they cough up 7 or so in the second quarter.
Yep.
Ross loses his mind, and they can't get back in time. Another strong performance of the Gold Coast. It's a nice little pocket for them this window of the year when they get to the Darwin and they play a few games because, as you said before, 9 games in a row. It's just about chalk it up. You walk in the gate, it says 4 points.
Yep, absolutely.
For Gold Coast.
And yet they want to get out of there. They want to go on.
Stupid.
I have no idea. I want to play 4 games there. Oh, that's what I'd be doing.
Why would you walk away from 8 points a year?
Bizarre. It's like Dimmer's thing that he feels like for them to be taken seriously as a footy club, they can't be selling home games up there. They've got the academy there. Treat it like, I don't know, you're home away from home.
Yeah.
Like the Giants have Canberra or whatever it turns out to be. I don't know why they look at it with such negative connotations, particularly with their record.
It's a win-loss business.
Isn't it?
It's a win-loss business. They win all the time.
He did mention Ethan Reid, by the way. He's been carrying a slight PCL, so he's been playing through it.
Right.
He said he's going to need a rest at some stage. And Kel Wilkie was the big injury watch in play. So he had an early end of the night after Ben Reid put his knee in the middle of his back. He's played 164 consecutive games. Talk about records. The all-time record from debut.
Has it been managed?
No, not yet.
Funny about that.
Jared Crouch, 194. So he's
from debut.
He's from debut, so right. He's 30 away from the all-time record.
Got some work to do.
We'll see if he plays against the Tigers next Sunday at Docklands. To Sydney and the GWS Giants with a little pot shot at the Bombers on the banner.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw this.
I did. Terrific.
It's a play clearly on the whiteboard from last week. So Essendon strengths, nothing. Weaknesses, 7,916 days. Brad Scott was asked about it in his post-match press conference.
I did catch it out of the corner of my eye. I mean, the Giants are pretty pretty desperate for some, you know, relevance in the competition, and you know, to try and build their fan base. Yeah, and I'm reluctant to sort of comment on other clubs, but yeah, they make their decisions, we'll make ours.
He's a great watch in his press conference.
Didn't seem overly reluctant. Came straight in.
I don't really want to say anything, but I just want to say that. I didn't mind. Tony Jones on Channel 9 today said, I actually misinterpreted it. I took it as 7,916 is the average crowd for a Giants game.
Oh, boom.
Little shots fired back the other way.
That's where Scotty could have gone. He's a competitor, Brad. He's sticking up for his footy club, which you'd expect. You can't win in that situation. You walk away with 0 points.
Yep.
If you have a good crack, you're a sore loser.
Wasn't looking too good, the banner, when they were
2-6
down, was it?
No, might have come back and bit them in the backside. But, I mean, you can't argue with fact, just by the way, if you're dealing with that banner. It's cheeky. They are edgy. Their banners and their social media is edgy. That's their brand.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's conversation, it's social media engagement, yeah. It's all that stuff that the modern world seemingly wants or needs.
Well, I'm an Essendon fan, and it's frustrating, but if you don't want to be laughed at, change it.
Yeah.
Do something about it. And unfortunately, like in an equalised competition with the draft and the salary cap and everything else, I always talk about you have a statute of limitations to consider yourself a great club, right? You need to win one premiership every 18 years to be on par.
Yep.
You win two in that time, you're trending towards being you are a great club. You've won multiple premierships. You've won more than your share in that 18-year window. Yep. If I check my watch, 2000 was the last premiership. They haven't won a final since 2004, let alone anything else. So, unfortunately, the statute of limitations for the Bombers is up. If they want to change that impression that the competition have of them or stop being the butt of the joke, change it.
Win a final.
Do something about it.
Get yourself in a position to win a final. Yeah, that's the least of my worries in footy. Banners from the opposition clubs, goodness me. You're getting fired up about that.
Yep.
Saying a bit more about you.
Good talking point. Dons 26 points up in the third quarter. The Giants kicked 10 of the last 13 goals to get the win. They're an interesting watch too, the Giants. So if you sort of had them in the mix at the start of the season, they need to get moving. That was an absolute non-negotiable. They had to get the points there.
No, they were poor yesterday.
Yeah.
They were poor. I heard Adam Kingsley last week saying, we'll be right after the game, post-match game last week. He said, no, we'll be right. We're okay. We'll be fine. Well, what I saw on the weekend, I'm not sure that's necessarily the case.
Shout out the games that are slam dunks here in their run. So they got West Coast in Perth. So they tick that box.
They should.
Brisbane at the Gabba.
Nope.
Melbourne in Alice Springs.
Oh, no. That's not a gimme. Melbourne will win that.
St Kilda at Docklands.
Challenge.
Carlton at Giant Stadium.
We'd want to win that.
Hawthorn at the G.
Nope.
Fremantle.
Nope.
At Manuka. And then Geelong in Geelong.
Nope.
Yep. That's a tough run.
That is a super tough run, isn't it?
They got to get moving. They got to start playing some reasonable footy. That Geelong game, sorry, by the way, is at Giant Stadium, the last one there. To the Saturday afternoon fixture, what might have been for North Melbourne? It felt like that kind of afternoon as they celebrated their 96 premiership reunion. More scoring shots, more disposals, more clearances, 16 more inside 50s. They didn't get the result.
Yeah, and that was disappointing. They've played some really good footy this year and haven't got rewarded necessarily in those given weeks. And that was another occasion on the weekend against Sydney. They were terrific. And I must admit, after the first month of footy this season for the Kangas, I was a bit sceptical about this progress that everyone was talking about. I hadn't seen it. But in the last month, we have all seen it. And you think, okay, there has been a system, there has been enormous growth, and they're competing. And that's, if you're a North Melbourne supporter, wins are great. But you've got to be able to compete against quality teams. And that's what they're doing. They missed out yesterday. You mentioned some of those numbers in their favour. And a couple of decisions that could have gone the other way or been in their favour in that moment that weren't given to them might have changed the dynamic as well. So they could probably sit there and be a bit sad about that result yesterday. But there's enormous growth. And I think Alistair Clarkson has finally been able to get through to this squad about what's required at the level. They are stepping up. And now they've got enough experience and chemistry as a unit. And that's one of the other parts of footy that no one talks about, the cohesion of the group and playing together and what that does. The more you do that, the easier footy becomes. Now, they're in that phase now, and they're getting some really good responses on the back of it. So really positive for them. Sydney found a way, and sometimes you've got to do that. Particularly, and I reckon Docklands does that to a lot of teams. It's a difficult place to play if you don't play there regularly.
You can get caught playing basketball, can't
yeah.
you? Just running
yeah.
up and down. And
it's just ping pong back up and back the yep. table. And they found themselves in that sort of look yesterday, but they won. So that's a great result for them. But from a Kangas fan, I'm really pleased with the last month of footy. We've had some wins, but we've competed. And we're looking like a team that will be able to do some damage when it all comes together.
They beat in the bottom three, and they beat Port Adelaide right at the start. They're the only three wins. I actually think their two best performances were in defeat.
Yeah.
Against the Swans and against the Giants. They were excellent both those occasions
yep.
and ultimately didn't get the result. Back to Friday night, the doubleheader. Zach Butters is my focus out of the game in Adelaide as my Sunday takeaway. He escapes sanction after ironing out Joel Frazier on Friday night. So the reasoning why this happened, so Butters was cleared due to the fact he elected to bump, but he made predominant contact with Frazier. Any high contact was negligible. So basically saying hit him in the body, didn't hit him in the head, and that Butters' actions did not constitute a reportable offence. There it is again. What do you make of this, that Butters has no case to answer, no fine, nothing for his incident with Joel Frazier?
I thought he was a bit lucky. I thought he should have been suspended. That looked to me like an incident and a mechanism that has been suspendable in the last couple of years of the AFL. So I was really surprised, I must admit, that there was zero sanction, effectively, for him, or in reality for him. And I thought there would have been a suspension coming. He made a decision to bump him. And the secondary incidental contact is, that was rubbed out a couple of years ago. That was a thing. And then they took that out and said, no, you're still responsible. Once you bump a player, choose to bump a player, if there is incidental contact, secondary or tertiary contact to the head, that's on you. So that's where I thought that judgment was a little bit flawed, because they have told us for the last couple of years, doesn't matter. You've made the call to bump, you hit him in the head, that's on you, and you'll be punished for that.
Runs past the ball. It's just an action where you thought, oh, we don't do that anymore.
He's done it before. That's right. He's done it before, and we don't do that again. No. We don't do that in modern footy.
And it's amazing how, you know, once upon a time we would think, oh, it's just part of the game. How could they eradicate that? Now that they've done a really good job at getting rid of it, I think all of us watching thought, we can't do that.
Well, it stands out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely, when that happens. No, I was really surprised, I must admit, that Zach Butters is free to play and has Brownlow eligibility still on the table.
A curious case of Carlton. So it was their best second half of the year.
Bizarre.
So it felt like the same thing, but the other way around. So instead of the hot first half and the slow second half, they did it in the reverse order. So is that progress or is it the same old thing?
I don't know. I've got a good answer for you there. I'll tell you what, when I was watching that game in the first half, I'm sitting there going, wow, like this is lifeless. This is so bad. And I've been a voice that's sort of been calling for calm at Carlton in terms of the coaching situation, and let's just get to halfway, get to the buy-in and review like every team does, and assess from there and take it from there. But at halftime on Friday night, I was sitting there going, whoa, they just won't play for him. This is lifeless. There's an amazing stat at halftime. They had 12 players with zero tackles and 9 players with one. So that's 21 of your 23 that had no more than one tackles in a half of footy. They had 15 tackles for the first half. Cripps and Hewitt, I think, had 3 apiece. The only other ones in that didn't have 1 or 0.
And you're chasing backside.
And you're playing Brisbane, and you're chasing backside. Yeah. And then they come out, and it's totally the opposite in the second half. So I don't know if there was paint off walls. I'd like to see if there was a bill from the Gabba to Carlton for the paint off the walls at halftime. I don't know. I hope there was, because they got a response. Michael Voss and his coaching staff, well, the players showed some pride and got a response. And I heard Patrick Cripps talk about it after the game, that they control their effort and their energy. That's not a coaching issue. They're the ones that have to take responsibility and accountability for that. And he spoke about it really interestingly after the game, for those that want to follow that up and have a listen to Cripps about that. And that's exactly right. They didn't play with any of that in the first half. And they look soulless. They look lost, soulless and broken. And then they become this team that threatens, after that deficit at halftime and the way that Brisbane were playing, they threatened to take that game away from them. Harry Mackay said all of a sudden, hey guys, I'm here. Don't forget about me. Well, thank you, Harry. It's nice to see you. Because that was fantastic what he did in that second half.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
3 goals in the last quarter. The team kicked 71 points after halftime.
They've been able to score after halftime the last 18 months.
5th best in 10 years that they've done. That includes
all. So I don't know what that means. To your question, I don't know what that means. So clearly now, there's no excuse for the second half fade out. Because they know that they can do it. If they have to conserve all the energy in the first half like they did to do it, then that's a problem.
I've never seen a team like
it. I don't know what to do with them.
I can't. And they're a one-win team with a coach that's off contract the season's end.
Yeah. And it's a win that they probably shouldn't have had.
Unbelievable. I've never seen a team quite like them, this version of Carlton.
That's bizarre.
Last of our Sunday takeaways before our favourite segment to complete ABC AFL Daily for your Sunday night, the magic of Wharfie time.
So yes.
If you would have seen this burst through your television set on Thursday night, and they've been doing it for a couple of years, but the in-game activation that supercharges the Dockers. It is phenomenal. How the crowd rallies behind it, 54,000 people all up screaming. The big Undertaker gong goes off, and then the Wharfie time flashes on the screen, and everybody buys into it. I asked Justin Longmuir about it when he joined us on AFL Saturday yesterday, and about if he controlled that and had the opportunity just to hit the button at any time he liked.
Not me. I would have had it going halfway through the second quarter to try and give us a lift, so don't trust me with that button. The timing's a unique one, and we've used it a little bit over the last probably 3 years, and it's usually when we're getting on a run and we just need the crowd to get a little bit more involved, and it's a great concept. I don't know whether it won us the game on the weekend. I thought we were coming, and we thought we had a lot of the game looking right, and we'd sort of started our run. But what it does, I would imagine, is spook the opposition a little bit, because the noise level goes to another level, and our crowd's always pretty boisterous anyway. and passionate and in the game, but it goes to another level. And I would imagine the Oppo, who haven't seen it before, would maybe get a little bit spooked or caught up in it, and therefore it gives us an advantage in that shape. So it's been a good concept, and yeah, hopefully we don't play in too many tight games where we need it, but it has been helpful, yeah.
Justin Longmuir on AFL Saturday. You can actually listen to that whole interview and the whole episode here in the podcast feed on ABC AFL Daily once you finish listening to this. But that's an incredible in-game activation, isn't it? Yeah. You're a fan of it?
Love it. Yep. Love it. And what a difference. Look, it's been the strength of Collingwood for years, hasn't it? The army that just gets noisy when things are rolling. And it's intimidating. It is really intimidating. And for the team that has the support, so Collingwood or Fremantle in this case with Warfie time, the ball of the cauldron of energy that is just pointed at you feeds you, and the adrenaline rush that comes with that is quite exhilarating. So I think it's a fabulous initiative. And I have no doubt it played a part in that result on Thursday night against Hawthorn. Now, I think they're probably overrunning them anyway, the way it was unfolding. But when you feel that energy for you, and you know it is for you, and they're cheering everything you're doing as a player out there, what that does to your biology is fascinating. And then collectively what it does, and what we saw it do on Thursday night, was brilliant. Why doesn't every team have one of those moments, one of those signals to get cranking from a spectator perspective? Now, you want a big stadium, a full stadium to do it.
So big responsibility, isn't it?
You wouldn't want to have 22,000 at the G for Richmond against Adelaide doing it, because that's not much fun.
Nah.
It's not much of a noise. But when you've got a stadium, as Justin Longmuir was saying there, it's almost always full and energetic. Yeah. In a stadium, it's going bananas for you. That is really cool.
I picture it too as like on a game show where you have the big red button and it's just a thing where someone sits there hovering over and going,
no whammies.
Boom. That's nuts. And the stadium just erupts.
Well, I coached a game yesterday at school. I coached a school team. And we had about 250 kids, I reckon, watching from behind the goals. And the second half, we weren't playing that well, but we're in front. And the second half, they got really energized, the kids. And our boys lifted through the roof in the last quarter in a bit. We changed, got them to change ends in the last quarter.
That's great.
So they were behind the goals we were kicking to in the last quarter. And I have no doubt that played a big part in what we became in that second half.
Yeah.
So it does. It does amazing things for the guys on the field.
All right. I've built to it. Our climactic finish, as always. It is now time for Half Serious.
Now, the game's got a problem, Corbin. The game's got a problem. I don't like to focus on negative things, but the game's got a problem, and it's a very simple fix. In the back is a problem. The in the back rule needs to change. It's because we're getting free kicks paid for in the back. When you get a little hand on the back side of someone's kicking the ball, that's downfield free kick in the back these days. But when you're around the contest and you jump on someone and drive them into the deck, it's play on. Now, this is a very simple fix. We just go back to the way we interpreted this rule as young people. When you jump on someone in the back on the ground, that's in the back. I don't care. If you're just leaning on him, that's in the back. Get off his back. Stop driving people into the ground. A, it's dangerous, and B, it's illegal, but the game is not paying that, which I have no understanding of why the game has got to a point where you can jump on someone, drive them into the deck, and that's not a free kick for in the back. Where, but now you push someone in the backside or in the side as they're going to kick it, and it's just a little touch. It's not a massive issue, and that's a free kick in 50 metres down the ground or advantage wherever the ball ends up. It's totally contradictory to the law of the game and the spirit of the law of the game. And this is becoming a common theme. We're getting away from the spirit of the laws of the game I can only think it's for scoring. I don't think it's for advertising, commercial revenue opportunities or whatever it is. That's the reason why we're doing it, for continuity of flow of game. That's why we're doing it. When it's safety should be a big part of this. We talked about it before with the way we attack the footy in a contested situation. But jumping on people's backs and driving them into the deck when they're trying to pick the ball up is not a safe act. And it's, according to the laws of the game, an illegal act. But we've lost sight of that and we refuse to play it as a game. So anyone that gets jumped on in future, from now on, we're going to play in the back and the game will come back to the people. And I'm only half serious.
Love it. That's a great way to finish. That is a strong take. I might even clip that out and send that to our man, Razor Ray Chamberlain. See if
I would love to have this punch on with Razor about this, because it's a joke what you're allowed to do to people around the ball these days.
Yep. You could just bury in and whatever happens, happens.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The play on. No worries. The ball's still moving. Don't worry about that bloke on the deck who's dying.
So as long as the ball comes out, we don't want to
play. We're happy.
We don't want to hold it up.
Very happy. And even if it doesn't, sometimes it gets locked underneath. But you've driven them into the deck. Oh, come on, please.
I'm going to keep an extra eye on it.
Keep an eye on it.
Very shrewd observation. It's been good fun, Half. Let's do it again soon. We won't worry about Ben.
Who?
Yes. Pre Appreciate your time as always.
Good on you, buddy. Have a great week.
Daniel Harford every Sunday right here on ABC AFL Daily, the home of your footy conversation with 5 episodes a week. Join us tomorrow for Monday's episode. That's AFL Monday. Myself and Ben Cameron, I promise, will be in studio, and the Carlton champion Mark Murphy will be with us. We'll catch you there.